Welcome to Tales of Mystara, a podcast about playing Dungeons & Dragons solo on the hollow planet of Mystara, using the basic rules popular in the 80s and 90s, Lost Relic, which should not just be valued for its importance in history, but enjoyed in the present as well. So, it's been a while since my last episode of this podcast. I lost my streak, basically, but I have a pretty good excuse for it, really. I broke my leg. If you've seen my last YouTube video for the Castle of the Quest series, then you'll have seen on that video, or heard on that video, that I broke my leg, and I did explain that I'd kind of go into a little bit more detail in this podcast episode here to kind of explain what happened. So basically, I was hiking up a fell mountain called Bowfell, which is a pyramid-shaped mountain, and it exists in the heart of the English Lake District. So me and my partner were hiking, and it was at the end of November, so a good few months ago now, and it was really icy, as you might imagine, coming into the sort of winter months. But we were really careful, trying not to slip, being very, very careful, very responsible. And we made it to the summit, and we made it all the way back down. At this point, we were literally just minutes from the pub, and we were coming through a farmer's yard, and we're actually saying to each other, oh, you know, we'll be able to celebrate and have a pint in less than 10 minutes. And we were coming through a farmer's yard at the foot of the fell, and there was a black car parked in the middle of the farmer's yard, and we were coming through a gate. My partner came through the gate, and she made it to this black car, and I could see there was an old man in the car handing some what looked like business cards out of the window, and they were possibly to do with sheep culling or something along those lines, some sort of political thing, I'm not quite sure. He was handing one of these cards to my partner, Helen, and I was coming through the gate at this point, and I was just really confused, thinking, who is this strange man in a black car handing out business cards in the middle of nowhere? So I was too busy looking at this, trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I came through the gate, and I felt my feet go out from under me. I felt my left foot go out from under me, and I don't remember my right foot moving. It was like the leg just wouldn't move. It just stayed still, which is why I wasn't able to sort of correct myself and fall in a more graceful, less dangerous way. So down I went, and I felt my leg go, basically. I won't go into too much details. I don't want to make you feel queasy, but I felt confident that I'd broken my ankle, which is what I thought it was at that time, and I guess I was in shock, and I just announced, I broke my ankle. And Helen said, are you sure? And at that point, I kind of thought, am I sure? And I was laid on the floor, unable to move, or at least I was scared to even try. I wiggled my toes, and I thought, should I be able to wiggle my toes? Maybe not. So at that point, I thought, I'm a fraud here. I haven't broken anything, but I've kicked up a fuss now by announcing it. So I just kind of laid there thinking, maybe I have, maybe I haven't, but we'll just go with it for now. Can't be too careful. And at this point, there were loads of hikers. It was kind of maybe mid-afternoon, but there were loads of hikers coming off the fell through the gate. And I'm laid on the floor, and every single group says what happened. And I had to tell the same story over and over again, over and over again. And I was cracking jokes, like, to kind of lighten the mood. At least I finished the walk. I must have said that joke. But I mean, it's not really a joke, but you know what I mean? That kind of little bit of positivity injecting it into the situation. And I kept saying, at least I finished the walk. And, oh, I was so looking forward to the pub. And I just kept having to say that same light-hearted thing to every group of hikers that came down. So it turns out the guy in the car was actually the farmer, and he went straight inside to get his wife to ring an ambulance. And she came out and she gave me a blanket, because at this point I'm laid on a patch of ice. It's getting a bit later into the afternoon, but obviously at this time of year, the sun goes down early, so it's very cold. What's left of my body heat is basically melting the ice. I've got a blanket over me that the farmer's wife came out and brought me, and the farmer's grandson also came out. And he had a little knife, and he was just kind of sat a few feet away from me, stabbing the ice with his with this little knife, saying, "Don't worry, I'll break the ice up for you." And he was just sort of chewing my ear off, asking me loads of questions, and I'm laying there sort of trying to concentrate on not moving. And so you can imagine how annoying this was. Anyway, the farmer's wife came out. She said it's a 6.5-hour wait for the ambulance. So she brought her two sons out, who were a little bit older than me, and they were quite big blokes. And they basically just said, "We're going to have to lift you into the car." So I think it must have been their sister went down with my partner to fetch her car and drive back up. And they basically just lifted me into the car. And at that point, you know, I was still thinking that I was potentially being a fraud. And I haven't actually broken anything. I've just badly sprained my ankle. And as soon as they pick me up, I'm going to be able to walk. But they picked me up, and I just remember it was almost like a pins and needles sensation in the area, but I couldn't really feel much. And it was a bit uncomfortable, but they put me in the car. And then as soon as I'd got in the car, the ambulance came. The ambulance came. So they had to lift me back out of the car and put me in the ambulance. They put me on the stretcher first. And at that point, as soon as I went on the stretcher and my legs were laid out in front of me, I saw that my right foot was not straight at all. It was not pointing where it should have been pointing. So that's how I knew, yes, I'm not a fraud. I have broken my leg. They pushed me on the stretcher into the ambulance, which was pretty bumpy. This is a pretty rocky yard. You can imagine it's at the foot of a mountain. So that kind of sucked. And then off we went towards the hospital. And on the way to the hospital, and I think it took about an hour and a half to get to the hospital, we hit traffic. And the traffic was a roadside accident. If you know the UK, like, our NHS is under such pressures, so they were saying, we may have to pull over and assist with the accident, which means we'll just sort of have to leave you here in the ambulance for an indefinite amount of time, because obviously my injury wasn't life threatening. But luckily they didn't need to assist, but because of the traffic they had to take all the bumpy country back roads to the hospital, which were really bumpy. So they gave me morphine, and I'm not used to morphine. I'd already had some But when I had the first sort of dose, I was very cold. So my circulation probably wasn't operating very speedily. But the second dose, as soon as I had it, I felt nauseous. I lost consciousness. And when I came to, I just heard the paramedic saying my name over and over, Tom, Tom. And I didn't know where I was. I could see I was in a bed. But as everything was kind of coming back into focus, I just remember looking at this paramedic with no memory of who it was. And I was thinking, is that my uncle? I don't know why, but that's where my mind went. It's my uncle who I haven't seen for years. Why is he in my bedroom? And then as soon as the realization set in where I was, I had the worst cramp in my broken leg ever. So I just kept yelling, cramp, cramp. And the paramedic was sort of rubbing the muscles under my leg to sort of heat up the area and get rid of the cramp. Eventually, I got to hospital. And the first thing they told me is that I'd broken, not my ankle, my leg, in two places, the tib and fib. The tib break was like a spiral break. It went all the way up, kind of from ankle to knee. So it was a really bad break. So they had to manipulate it because my foot wasn't straight. So they had to manipulate the leg, which wasn't too pleasant. Then they cast it. Then the next day I had an operation, and I've sort of spent the last 7 or 8 weeks on crutches. Couldn't walk at all at first. So I was just kind of laid up, but I'm on crutches at the moment. I can just about walk around the house, and I keep going to the hospital periodically to get x-rays. The last x-ray I had, they were a little bit concerned that the break, did the fracture didn't seem to be healing, so that they think it could be possibly what they call a non-union fracture, which is a little bit scary. Because it basically means that the fracture's not kind of joining back together. I don't know what will happen if that's the case, but hopefully when I go back in another month and they do more x-rays, that everything will be fine. But I'll kind of update you. But anyway, so that's kind of non-D&D related, but I just thought I'd share that with you just to kind of get the ball rolling and also, you know, explain where I've been for the last month or however long it's been. But let's move on. Let's look at what's been happening in my Beckmer year. When I last left off, the party were wanting to explore the west side of the Palace of Evander, which is where the adventure that they're on is taking place. The palace is in Radleb Woods. If you've been watching this series since episode one, then you'll be aware what's going on. If not, go back, listen. So the party entered a door on the west side of the throne room of the palace. And beyond the door, the party saw a large dining hall complete with a long table with benches on either side. In the very centre of the table was a fine copper chalice with silver filigree. And there was also a magical sphere identical to the one seen at the east end of the palace. The sphere was floating directly above the copper chalice. In the very centre of the right side of the table, Ilyena noticed an ornately carved high-back chair, perhaps for the meal host. And Yolanda stepped into the room and was distracted by something shiny and reflective flickering from somewhere up a small chimney above a fireplace on the east wall. She attempted to climb up the chimney to investigate, and at level 2, she had an 88% chance to succeed, which she did with no problem. So she just about managed to scramble up the chimney and the air inside tasted dry and sooty, but the chimney had clearly not seen use for a long time. She retrieved three small, distinct crystal balls, each one a different reflective hue and cut. She delivered all three straight to Cathbad, who immediately began to study them thoughtfully, but his concentration was immediately interrupted by a metallic clang coming from the table as the copper chalice was lifted by some unknown force and projected at great speed towards him. The party won the initiative. Ilyena and Yolanda quickly moved forward to engage the possessed object. Ilyena held her shield firm and ready and waited for the chalice to make the first move. If it was to come near her, she planned to set her shield against the attack. And this is a weird one, really. And I actually cannot recall exactly how this came about in the game. I should have taken better notes, really. But as I explained earlier in this series, I often automate character actions to remove myself from the situation in order to prevent influencing the outcome unfairly. Because these are the things that you are challenged with when you're playing solo TTRPGs. In other words, it's basically you're trying not to metagame. And combat is one place where I often automate what the characters do, because I feel like it's one place where metagaming can give you an advantage that does unbalance the challenge. That's what we want to avoid, to maximise the enjoyment of the game. So I did it in this combat. I automated it. And if I recall, for Ilyena's action, I rolled up defend or parry. And the trouble is, although this is a pretty generic result, and I use this type of automation in various games, not just Beckme, so it has to have a kind of generic output to make it sort of universal. Parrying is actually a fighter combat option that isn't available in Beckme until 9th level. So the option to sort of defend, parry, puts us on kind of strange territory in terms of applying the rules as the rules state. The closest action to defending, we're basically avoiding parrying. I avoided parrying because parrying is a 9th level fighter combat option. So I went with defending and looked at how I might do that without breaking the rules. The closest action is to use the set spear versus charge mechanic, which is something that fighters get at level 1. So I want to make a good point here about Beckme rules. In my opinion, the very nature of a good D&D campaign is players should be able to try anything they want. You know, I lift my shield up and hold firm so I can defend the attack is a pretty reasonable request to make of the referee. But the way that Beckme separates out a lot of combat manoeuvres and locks them out of use by lower levels kind of gets in the way of doing this a little bit. You know, the dungeon master referee might say, well, you can't do that because your level is too low. But I think a good DM would try to handle these requests to try things that are similar. So that's what I try to do. So I decided to handle this situation like a set spear versus charge maneuver. I didn't allow double damage or damage adjustments for the shield, and I think that that's quite fair because it's not providing the full advantage because Ilyena does not have a spear, so she can't set spear versus charge. So yeah, I took away these adjustments to make it a different mechanic, basically. So this is a ruling that I think was quite fair. But let me know in comments or through email, solodungeoncrawler@gmail.com. Write in, let me know if you agree or disagree with this approach. So Yolanda, moving on to her, she swiftly drew her hand mirror and pointed it at Cathbad, displaying his reflection in attempt to confuse the chalice. But it had no effect. The chalice attempted to bash Cathbad on the head again. Again, coming back to my automated actions in combat, if my memory serves me well, I rolled use for Yolanda and her hand mirror was selected at random. And I'm pretty sure I was forced to use an oracle to ask whether the mirror would confuse the chalice. It did not. So unperturbed, the chalice rolled a successful hit against Cathbad and knocked him unconscious and prone. Cathbad dropped the crystal balls. Luckily, they did not smash, but instead they rolled away, still in one piece. The chalice won the initiative on the second round of the combat. And despite Cathbad's unconsciousness, it bashed the poor magic user a third time, doing a point of damage this time. So I'll explain why this was happening. The chalice attacks by flying towards an opponent and bashing into them. And the creature who has been bashed by the chalice must make a saving throw versus wands. On a failed save, the creature is stunned for 6 rounds, which is a minute. If the creature bashes a stunned creature, they become unconscious and fall prone. Additional hits upon an unconscious creature will cause a single hit point of damage. So Ilyena, while this was happening, backed away about 5 feet, preparing herself to defend an attack as Yolanda came to Cathbad's aid. As Ilyena backed up, she kicked the crystal balls to the far side of the dining room, believing the chalice was protecting them. The enchanted item did not go after them, however, but instead it seemed to be turning its attention towards Ilyena. While its focus was distracted, Yolanda feinted a crouch towards Cathbad in an attempt to position herself for a rear attack. For the third round, once again the chalice won the initiative and made a pretty good roll against Ilyena. Ilyena's random action was again to defend or parry. As I explained earlier, Ilyena is not high enough level to perform a formal parry manoeuvre, but as she was focusing on defence, I decided to give her the benefits of quarter hard cover, presuming she was using the edge of the table to defend herself. With the aid of the extra cover, she just about managed to fend off an attack from the chalice. And at that very moment, Yolanda reached out to grab the foot of the chalice and attempted to drive it as hard as possible onto the edge of the table. So this, in essence, was a form of parry. She used her surroundings to her advantage. And I think, for me, my advice to a DM using Beckmy rules, instead of saying to players, you can't do that, that's a combat manoeuvre, is to use what the player is telling you as an opportunity to maybe incorporate creative ways of them using their surroundings, creative ways of using their weapons and the other gear that they're carrying, and use some of these options as a basis, because they can help you keep the balance, you know. this fight is not level 9, so they can't do these things. But I, reading these rules, I can see what advantages these maneuvers give the player at level 9. So, you know, if the player's level 2, then how do I balance it out so that they can do something a little bit similar, but it doesn't offer the same advantages? So anyway, Ilyena made an attack roll in order to determine how successful this defensive form of attack would be, and she rolled a natural 20. The chalice had just 2 hit points, and I ruled that the table could do 1 to 4 points of damage. I think that's fair. And the damage done was actually 2. Which was obviously enough to destroy the chalice. So she broke the chalice in 2, and this broke the enchantment spell, and the party took a turn after this to rest and rouse Cathbad, and that was the end of the combat encounter. During their rest, Cathbad retrieved and carefully examined the crystal balls. He had no way of knowing what the magical properties of each might be unless he used them to find out. As a magic user, he does understand that looking into a crystal ball whilst thinking of a certain place will allow him a remote viewing of it. He considered viewing beyond the door marked with the half moon, the one at the north end of the throne room that overlooks a mysterious garden. I mentioned it in the previous couple of episodes. But as he has never been there, no doubt the image would not be clear. So instead, he stored the finds away for safekeeping. So I'll let the game rest there for now, and I'll pick up in the next episode and show you what happens after that. So, you know, we've had a look at the game, and I'm going to do something a little bit different now. So I've been thinking about ways to improve this podcast and make it not just about playing D&D solo, not just about you know, having a narrative setting in Mystara, but I also want to maybe bring in some other things, like, you know, the odd discussion of Bechme rules, or to bring in some Mystara lore, Mystara, the known world, however you want to identify it. And I thought with this episode, a good place to start would be with Radleb Woods. And the reason I've chose Radleb Woods, which is a wood situated in central Karamikos, is because this is where I placed the Palace of Evendur, which is the adventure that I'm currently playing through. And this is a homebrew adventure that I made originally for 5th edition, but I'm kind of reworking it to do it on this podcast and play through it with Yolanda, Ilyena and Cathbad. And so I've set it in Radleb Woods, and I'm kind of rewriting the whole adventure, hoping to maybe put it up on the DM's Guild or somewhere like that for people to download at some point. But I need to finish playing through it and kind of perfect it. I do have an old copy on there somewhere, but I wouldn't recommend it because it's kind of unfinished. I did it many years ago. And it's not great and needs a lot of work, and it's for 5th edition, and there's a couple of issues with it. I think there's a couple of kind of obvious flaws in the plot which I have since addressed. But anyway, that aside, let's look at Radleb Woods. There's not a lot of official published information out there pertaining to Radleb Woods. The main resources of information that I used in order to, you know, inform myself about this area was the Gazetteer number 1, The Grand Duchy of Karamikos, which was published in 1987. Karamikos Kingdom of Adventure, which was published in 1994. This is for second edition, I think. But the information in it is really good. It's very useful information for setting a Bekmi campaign in Karamikos. And also, another good resource is Night's Dark Terror, which is module B10, and that was published in 1986. Now, I wouldn't recommend buying these resources to learn more about Red Lib Woods exclusively, because, as I said, there isn't a lot of information about that area. It's just, this is the only place that has much information about Radleb Woods at all, but the information is very lacking, so don't buy those products for that reason, but definitely buy them for information in regards to Mystara, in particular Karamikos, which is a great place to start a Mystara campaign, and it's where I started the Tales of Mystara campaign. So Radleb Woods sits in central Karamikos, as I've said, and it's the home to the Kalari elves. Most elves in Karamikos are Kalari elves, and Kalari elves are very pale. They tend to have blonde or white hair and blue eyes. They usually wear green robes or green tunics, and these clothes tend to be elaborately embroidered with leaf patterns. And the Kalari elves are known to be great lovers of horses. So it might be a good place for characters to purchase decent horses for to help them in their campaign. The highest concentration of Kalari elves is actually in Radleb Woods. Most of them live on the eastern side of the woods, and a much smaller number, in accordance with the information in Night's Dark Terror, live in Riflion. So Riflion is an elf trading post on the eastern side of Radleb Woods. It has a population of just 170 elves, according to Night's Dark Terror, which I believe is set at least maybe a decade or thereabouts after the Gazetteer. That's Gazetteer number one. But I can imagine not a lot has changed. So I think that population is probably about there or thereabouts. And Riflion is on the western bank of the Windrush River. So it's right on the edge of Radleb Woods. The buildings are all wooden in Riflion, and they are mostly two-story buildings. And Radleb Wood is not as dark or ominous as those to the west of Karamikos, but obviously having the Palace of Evander situated there, that does bring a certain amount of dark, magical mysticism. So on the far west side of Radleb Woods is Radleb Keep. And at Radleb Keep, there's a battalion of guards that are based there that are known as Hell's Jailers, and they're stationed at the keep to basically prevent infiltration from the Black Eagle Barony, which exists to the west of Karamikos. And the Black Eagle Barony is ruled by Ludwig von Hendrix, and he wants to overthrow his cousin, Duke Stefan, who is the ruler of Karamikos. And the Black Eagle Barony has one law, which is obey the Baron or die. The northwest side of the wood, there is Corris Zeggi Keep, which is a gloomy and haunted place. The Korizeki family were mysteriously lost to a great calamity several hundred years before the date of this campaign. And people who wander too close to the keep tend to disappear. And legend has it that the head of the family forged a pact with evil. So there's plenty going on in and around Radleb Woods. But it's also a pretty large place with plenty of blank woodland hexes. And because the official material doesn't give a lot of info, if you're looking for a blank canvas to set a woodland adventure or two, it's a great location to do that. And with the Palace of Evendore, that's exactly what I've done. So if you've ever set a adventure in Radleb Woods, you know, let me know in comments what that adventure was, whether it was homebrew or whether you pulled an adventure module from somewhere else and set it in Radleb Woods. I'd love to know. So let me know in the comments. Or if you're not watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to this on a podcast or podcatcher even, then let me know by emailing me at solodungeoncrawler@gmail.com. Be interesting to sort of hear your experiences with Radleb Woods. So yeah, I look forward to that. And that's about it for today, for this particular episode. So I'll see you next session. Have a great week. Goodbye.